Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the first canto, chapter 1, entitled Questions by the Sages, text number 2. Dharma projita kaita votra paramo nirmat saranam sata. Vedyam vastamam atravastu shivadam tapon trayan mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Krite Kim Vapare Rishvara. Sajya Uride Avarujyate Trakriti Vishushubis Tatksana. Dharma Projita Kaitavo Traparamo Nirmat Suranam Sata. Vedyam vastamam atravastu shivanam tapo trayun mulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Krite Kim Vapare Rishvaraha. Sadhya Uride Avarujyate Trakriti Vishushubis Tatksana. Dharma Projita Kaita Votra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam. Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu Shivadam Tapo Trayamulanam. Srimad Bhagavate Mahamune Krite Kim Vapare Rishvara. Sadyuridi avrujyate trakriti vishushubis tatksana. We continue with the purport. Oh, first translation. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality, distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. It is interesting that the highest truth is described as reality distinguished from illusion. This is the process. In order to come to the highest truth, we must distinguish reality from illusion, and we must realize that we have been in the illusory energy since time immemorial. Therefore, we are prone to be illusioned, and therefore we should consider in our dealings with our surroundings that illusion may be influencing us. Therefore, we must be very much on guard in regards to the illusory energy. And whenever certain desires or ideas manifest itself, we should question, we should be thoughtful, we should consider, are these actually beneficial? Are these actually going to be beneficial in terms of Shreyas? Shreyas means long-term benefit. Prayas is referring to the short-term benefit, which may give us some immediate attractive results, but devotees are not interested in prayas. They are only utilizing all their energy, prana, artha, diya, vacha, for the achievement of Sreyas. So that is our aim. We're aiming for a long-term benefit in spiritual life. The scriptures indicate how to attain such a long-term benefit. Therefore, we must always check with the scriptures to see if our actions are properly directed. Another point that we were seeing is the word nirmatsaranam, which means to be free from envy, is also being translated as of the 100% pure in heart. Because it is this quality of envy which causes us great, great difficulty. It is due to envy that we desire to be something that we are not, to be something else. That is what envy is all about. Envy means we are not accepting our actual position, but rather we want to take another position. So, therefore, it is stated that a devotee must be humble. Humility is the beginning of spiritual life. In the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we find in verse 8 to 12 many qualities listed, and the first quality is amanitvam. Amanitvam, adambitvam are two qualities that are mentioned at the beginning. Amanitvam means humility, and adambitvam means pridelessness, so to be free from pride, which is in a way the same, but it is again reiterated, this time in the form of a prohibition, pridelessness, no pride. Humility, yes, but pride must not be there. So in this way, we are, this point is emphasized twice. The reason is that humility is a very important quality. And in fact, we can understand that humility is a natural quality. Because humility is simply the result of honesty, to admit that we are not very special, to admit that we are not very qualified, to admit that we are not very intelligent, to admit that we are not anything of anything, right? That is humility. So humility is very much related to honesty. One must give up the tendency to project a particular image of oneself to other people, to try and make an impression upon other people. So humility is very important. Somehow or other, this is required if one wants to come before the Supreme Lord. If a man comes before the Supreme Lord, it says, with a big, big turban on his head, with many jewels on top, it looks very impressive. But what is the use of such a head if it doesn't bow down to the Lord? No use. Even the biggest turban with so much decoration will be of no value. So it is explained. So it is also explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that humility is very important. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahisuna amanina manadena kirtanya sadahari. It is explained that we should be more humble than a straw in the street. So, why more humble than a straw in the street? We can think about that for a moment. More humble than a straw in the street? Why? Even more humble than a straw in the street. Okay, first, the straw in the street is obviously quite a humble position. First of all, it's very small and insignificant, a piece of straw. Second of all, it's nothing special. There's plenty of straws and things like that lying in the street. Therefore, the position of the straw is insignificant and really nothing special. But why should we desire to be even lower than a straw in the street? Right? Why is our position even lower than a straw in the street? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this point. He says the reason why we are lower than the straw in the street is because the straw in the street is actually by constitution in a very low position. By constitution, he's insignificant, but he cannot actively do anything to degrade himself further. But we are even capable of that, right? We are even capable, although we are by nature insignificant, although by nature we are in a low and fallen position, still on top of that, we can actively do something to degrade ourselves even further. Therefore, lower than a straw in the street. Yes, that's interesting. I read it the other day and I noted it because I thought, oh, that's an interesting little note. Because actually, why? Lower than a straw in the street. So this is the condition for spiritual advancement. Unless we come to this platform of humility, which means honesty, accepting what we are, not very qualified, we cannot give up our competition with Krishna. As long as we are still concerned with our own qualities, our own abilities, our own glorification, Krishna will give us that. Krishna will give us that. It is said that if a man is doing many wonderful activities, but if for these activities he's looking for praise, yes, then he'll get that reward of praise. But he will not really get the genuine taste of his of selfless service to Krishna. He'll miss out on that. That is the point. So we may be, in the cause of our devotional service, do many things in the hope that others will see. We're fasting, you know, like on an ekadasi completely, right? We get counting beats on our japa mala, which are 1 meter long, you know. It's like we're chanting and everyone can see. We are doing so many things to be seen. So as we are engaging in devotional service in this mood, the result will be that we are getting the enjoyment of the recognition. But because we are in that mood of enjoying our activity, we cannot truly taste the nectar of selfless devotional service engaged in for the pleasure of Krishna. So this is the problem. So although externally the activities may be exactly the same of one who is selflessly engaging in the service of the Lord and a devotee, he may do the same service, but he has a selfish motive and a motive for recognition. So we have to give up this tendency for recognition. That is important, because otherwise how will it be possible to ever come to the perfection of devotional service? Therefore, nirmatsaranam, nirmatsaranam, free from the sense of competition. I'll continue a little bit more with the purport. Nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. This conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates the simultaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadi Asya Sutra. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. So this is a very complex subject matter, because ultimately, how can one truly understand that Krishna is there in his beautiful personal feature, playing his flute with his Vaijanti, Mala, and so many varieties of decorations, and simultaneously he's expanded himself in different energies, the internal energy, the marginal energy, the external energy. How is this possible that unlimited universes exist outside the Supreme Lord, Vaikuntha planets with innumerable living entities which are all the energy of the Supreme Lord? How can you understand that Krishna, right, is ultimately standing on Krishna? The Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form is simultaneously standing on himself, because it is only his own energy. So how can we truly understand this? We can discuss it, but it remains inconceivable. The Supreme Lord is not diminishing when he is there in his original form of Tribhanga, Shyamasundara, the three-bent form of Shyamasundara. He is complete. He's complete. Don't think that he is only a manifestation of the all-pervading transcendental energy called Brahman. No. That is an incorrect understanding according to Krishna himself, who says in the Bhagavad Gita, avyaktam vyaktim apananyate mam abudhya. He says such a person is abudhya. Abudhya. He is less intelligent, a person who thinks that the vyakta is coming from the avyakta. Such a person is less intelligent, according to Krishna. This is the word of Krishna. And actually, there was an interview with one famous Baba, who is known for his fashionable looks, and also for some of his mystic feats. And that this Baba was presenting that he was a manifestation of the all-pervading divine energy of the Lord. And Prabhupada began to dictate a letter to him immediately. And he quoted from Bhagavad Gita. And he said, sir, right, if you are claiming to be an avatar, right, then how is it that you are contradicting yourself? Right? Because in your previous incarnation, right, you have been stating this in Bhagavad Gita, avyaktam vyaktam apanam manyante mama buddhya. So according to your own words, sir, you are less intelligent. Prabhupada wrote to him like this. So in this way, Prabhupada had no reservations. He had no reservation in exposing Mayavad. We may remember that Prabhupada went to Japan, and in Japan he went there to this city called Kobe, and there the devotees had already been preaching for a while, and there was one gentleman also, Indian gentleman. He was very favorable. He really wanted to help the devotees, and he was a religious man. He liked anything to do with Dharma. He was always the first one to support it, so he was organizing the program, and the devotees were coming on the stage. And on the stage, there was a big Vyasasana and then a small asana for the speakers. So the devotees said, oh, Prabhupada should sit on the big Vyasasana. The man said, no, that is not possible. That is for our Guruji. That's reserved for our Guruji. He said, yes, but Prabhupada is Jagat Guru. He is the Guru for the entire universe, so he must be sitting on this. And they were very determined, and they convinced him. So then the idea was, all right, then the different speakers for this program can use this seat. Prabhupada was supposed to use it, and after Prabhupada, there was one other Swami from India supposed to speak. So the other Swami was from the Sankar Sampradaya, from Sankaracharya. So, well, Prabhupada sat down on the seat, and he spoke nicely, and there was chanting, and then, okay, there was a signal from the organizer, it was time for the other speaker. So the organizer asked Prabhupada, please come down from the Vyasasana, so that the other speaker could sit. But Prabhupada did not come down. He just stayed there. He refused to come down. He kept on sitting on his Vyasasana, no matter how many times he was invited to come down. He was smiling. He was smiling and very friendly. Yes, yes. But he kept on sitting. Right? Until, well, the organizer finally brought the little Vyasasana, and the other Swami sat on the little Vyasasana. So then Prabhupada was sitting there while the Swami began a speech in Hindi, and Prabhupada was listening and everything was all right. And then Prabhupada said to the devotees, start kirtan, kirtan. And they had a big kirtan. And they just right in the middle of the Swami's speech. So this was, of course, a little heavy. The organizer didn't appreciate it at all. He was very upset. Prior to the program, he had been speaking about donating a house for the new temple. But Prabhupada didn't care. Prabhupada did not consider that while he was sitting in the middle of the program, and because as soon as the other Swami began to say that the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal, Prabhupada couldn't tolerate it. He couldn't tolerate it. Being a Vaishnava, deeply through and through, he could not tolerate that his Supreme Lord Krishna was being blasphemed here, and that this Swami was saying that the form of Krishna is Maya, that it is illusion. Absolutely, he couldn't tolerate. And he wasn't calculating, yes, but if I say something against it, I'm going to lose the donation of a whole house. So in the interest of Krishna consciousness, let's tolerate little Mayavad philosophy. You know, what can you do? It's for Krishna. No, he would not, in any way,
compromise.
Compromise, that's the word I'm looking for, thank you. Compromise, yes. So that was very, very nice. There's a story, which I'll tell just another one, since I go from story into story. There's another story, which is a story in nature. It's taking place in the forest, and there is in the forest, some hunters came into the forest on horsebacks and dogs and everything with them, you know, like really serious hunting in the forest, right? So all the animals in the forest felt being chased and were in anxiety. So there was one of the animals, he was hiding in the bush. He was a chameleon. So he was taking the green color of the bush, and no one could detect him. So he was there hiding very well, and all the hunters were going by. Then the chameleon, he suddenly heard some heavy breathing next to him. There was another animal next to him, and he looked, and he saw that it was a black panther. So he said, hello, sir, very politely, naturally. And then the panther was obviously not so interested in the chameleon. He could see that. He was in the same boat. He was also hiding from the hunters. So then the chameleon said, why don't you do what I do? Why don't you just change your color, become green and hide in the bush? And the panther said, how can I do that? I am a panther. And he just jumped right out of the bush, roared, and of course he was shot. Right. What to do? So, in this way the story unfolded, and the chameleon seemed to be the one who was faring best. But after some time, fate had its way, and the chameleon was being caught. He was caught, and as he was caught, he was put into a cage and wound up in someone's home. And there the people were looking at him, and they were throwing different things in the cage to see how he could change his colors. And it was like one of the assets of the family. So one day, the young boy, he was home alone, so he took the chameleon and put him on the table. So the chameleon tried to escape. And therefore, he was hiding himself on the table, and the tablecloth was red, white, and blue stripes. So the chameleon just took red, white, blue stripes and disguised himself like the tablecloth. But the boy spotted him. So then the chameleon started running, and as he was running, he very quickly changed colors. Right? So the stripes were changing so fast, and in the course of doing that, had a heart attack and died from being so, from changing colors so fast. Right? So this story is actually meant to show two types of people. One is the person who stands up for principle, who is completely himself and will not compromise, and who will just stand there and roar, right? No matter what anyone says. And the other one is the diplomat, right? Who changes color? Yes, yes. Definitely, I agree with you. Yes, very nice. What, yes, yes. Whatever you say, yes. In India also, this is very well known, this yes, yes. Whatever you say, yes, yes. Huh? You go to one shop, you know, and you check it out. You ask them for it's a cloth shop, and you ask them, where can I buy pumps? Yes, yes, this shop, only this shop. Yes, you can buy. Yes, I have another shop. I will bring the pump for you. But you're selling cloth. No, 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 no. My other shop, I'm selling pumps. He says, I'll get it brought. And he'll send someone quick. He'll bring a pump from another shop, put it in his shop, add some money to it, and he makes his profit. Right? Yes, yes. This is the philosophy. Always yes. So the chameleon is always changing color. He's adjusting to the situation. So in modern times, there are very, very few people who are principled and who will just stand up for a principle. Most people, they are used to little white lies for convenience. So that's more the chameleon trait. The chameleon mode of adjusting to people, of somehow or other becoming liked, appreciated by someone else, but not become, just be blunt and unwanted by a person, right? So we, in general, as preachers, our business is not to be chameleons, because ultimately that is not the most pleasing. Actually, people are not so pleased if they notice that you just echo whatever they say and flatter them, right? Some people may be pleased for a while. But if you actually show that, if we show that we are authentic people who are genuinely standing up for what we believe, then people will also become impressed by the purity. Therefore, we see that Prabhupada was generally more in the mood of the panther than in the mood of the chameleon, although sometimes he could be a chameleon, right? If it really had to be, of being diplomatic and tactful to make people take Krishna consciousness, then Prabhupada was the best chameleon. Then he could change colors in such a way that no one could even notice that he was doing it. So we are not choosing for one model over the other, but still, in principle, a Vaishnava is inclined towards authenticity. And this is important. This is very important, that we become authentic persons, that we become genuine in our devotion. Not just that it's all external, what we are displaying, but that we are just living what we are. Not that for the sake of preaching we are trying to convince people that we are really fired up, etc., and do a good show. But rather, it should be genuine. Even when we are giving a lecture on Srimad Bhagavatam, we should actually not give lectures. We should stop giving lectures. We should just speak about the Bhagavatam. We should just try to the best of our ability to explain and glorify it as much as we know about it. And obviously, by our studying the Bhagavatam and other scriptures, we get learning, and then we can explain things. That is the way we should simply proceed in the Bhagavatam. But as soon as we try to give a lecture, then we are posing ourselves, then we are on stage, right? Then we are doing our dance, and everyone is watching what we're doing there, and we try to impress, throw out this sloka. Well, I got another few things, and then before the class, one can, of course, learn all kinds of difficult verses by heart that nobody knows, which is really impressive. In this way, we can try to impress, either in giving the lecture or as a movement. So in the past, it has been like that. Maybe not so much here, but I remember that the temple, picture of the temple in 1976, right? A nice house, and devotees in front of every window hanging out, Hari Bol, a row of devotees in front of the building, right? And, okay, the photo. Then you got like 19... Huh? You took him, huh? Okay, then you took the next one also, in 1982. The bigger temple, more devotees hanging out of the windows and standing in front of the doors, a few Sankirtan vans even in front of the door. Bang! Progress, right? And you remember and then the one from 84. The only thing you didn't photograph at the same time was the bank balance, right? Which was going down, and the debt in the bank. You didn't photograph that. Nor did you photograph the istogosti that was being held one day when the president came with a very serious look on his face and said, in general, devotees are not so aware of these matters because mostly we are not concerned so much with the administration. But today we like to speak a little about the administration because the matter is getting serious. What can we say? The economy is not what it has been, and actually we are in debt, you know. In debt? We are in debt, yes. And if we don't immediately do something, we have to close the temple. No! How is this possible? And then, no problem, we'll just extend the marathon with 2 weeks and everything will be all right. Yeah? Huh? It used to be like that, and marathons were getting close to each other. And sometimes marathons were even touching each other. Right? And one marathon went over into the next, and marathon became a way of life. And in this way, devotees were wondering, is there anything else, you know? So what for? For preaching, Prabhu. We did all this for preaching. That's what we did it for. So that is glorious. That is glorious that we worked so hard for preaching. But then we saw that sometimes some of the great achievements also just were lost very quick. They were there one day and were gone the next. We saw some palaces appear and some palaces disappear in our days of ISKCON history. So therefore, considering all that, we may make these days do it a little different. We may these days consider that real preaching also means that we ourselves are really experiencing devotion towards Krishna. When that's not there, it's a little difficult to just preach and preach and preach. Then one becomes dry. So we have to work on that. Sometimes it is thought, well, somehow or other, if we just do enough reading and we do enough chanting, then everything will be all right. But that is the kind of system of like a car tire, which has a leak in it, and then pump it up every time a little bit, you know, and then we can drive again for another day and then pump again, right? So it's like, how do you feel, Prabhu? Terrible. Okay, Prabhu, what's wrong with you? I'm in Maya. What can I do? Right, okay, Prabhu, read, yes, read. Okay, read, the Bhagavatam, the magical cure, questions by the sages, this knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one, stay awake, read, and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to reestablish, feel a lot more, better already. Can't, Prabhu, yes, can't. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Krishna. Like that, right? Yes, how do you feel? No, inspired again. Yeah, completely. No, ready for it. You know, I'm going to do it. We're going to preach. We're going to conquer. Yes, we have seen all this, yes. We have seen this too many times. So that's not actually the purpose of the reading, right? The purpose of the reading is not to pump up the tire. Because you get problems if you do that. It's bad for health, for one thing. No, it's okay. Just from the Harinam, my voice is a little down today. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that the reading is meant to increase our understanding, to understand who is Krishna. Krishna is wonderful. Krishna is truly very nice. Material life, it cannot really offer you anything because you cannot enjoy it. So what is the point? You say you cannot enjoy. Come on, don't be so pessimistic. You can enjoy. Maharaj, you know, you don't enjoy ice cream with a lot of cream on top? Well, we do. Maybe sannyasis don't enjoy, but we enjoy like anything, right? You have no eye for beauty? well, I can see the difference between, you know, a beautiful one and an ugly one. Right? What can I say? Come on, Maharaj. And we can enjoy a little bit, right? Maybe, yeah, you can enjoy. That's true. We don't deny that you can enjoy. But we cannot enjoy to our satisfaction, to a full satisfaction. That's the problem. The desire is always greater than the enjoyment. Therefore, no matter how much you try to enjoy, one will remain frustrated. And that is the point. That is why we say that in this material world, you cannot really enjoy, because you cannot be satisfied. So this is the thing. So we must thoroughly be convinced of this. So spiritual life is not just a matter of somehow or other generating some enthusiasm. It is a matter of going in depth and thoroughly understanding. Of understanding. The enthusiasm must come from the point that we are thoroughly fed up with material life to start off with. That we say, I do not want to suffer anymore. And even if I enjoy a little bit for a while, it can never really satisfy. And meanwhile, I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my time. And time is ticking. Very soon I'll be finished. There is a drawing which I saw in Mayapur of, it's an old drawing, and it shows a frog. There's so many frogs, typical Mayapur frog sitting there. And then there's a snake crawling up from behind. Tongue is going, snake is crawling, and the frog is just croaking very loud. And the snake comes and grabs the frog, and he begins to swallow that frog. And as he is swallowing the frog, there's a little fly going right in front of his nose, and his tongue shoots out, and he catches the fly. He's already half eaten by the snake, and he's catching a little fly that is coming in front of his nose. Oh yes, it tastes good, that fly. Delicious little fly. Our frog is enjoying his fly like anything, but the reality is that his hindsight, the backside, is already eaten by the serpent, and soon the front also. So this serpent is known as Kalasarpa. So says Kalasarpa can mean black snake, but it can also refer to the snake of time. So the snake of time is there, and it has already consumed us since the time of birth. Right? This is reality. So right now, what is our point? Trying to enjoy a few little flies in this world while we are croaking, or should we do something about the situation where we're in, being devoured by serpents? So the Srimad Bhagavatam is making this clear to us. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to give us some understanding. When you have understanding, then we can be very calm and peaceful and simultaneously very inspired to go back to the spiritual world. Then it's not a matter of, well, I feel again that my enthusiasm is going down. I need some association. No. If you have the understanding, the thorough understanding, then you know at all times, place, and circumstances that actually there is nothing in this material world for me. And the only thing to do is to get out of here. So this is the point. That is knowledge. So we have to get knowledge, that we have to become freed from ignorance. It is due to ignorance that we think, well, but maybe you can still enjoy a little bit. And then try again, right? No. This we should give up. We should know that it is not possible. And when the mind begins to play tricks like this, we have to preach to the mind. So the first thing is conviction. That helps. But then the other thing is, yes, we should also realize the sweetness of Krishna, the wonderful nature of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like yesterday, I was spending some time reading in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, and it's just really nice. It was described how when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, that then at that time, of course, all the ladies came and different other people came to offer to see the newborn child and make different offerings to the child. So some of the demigods, they were mixing with the regular people, but they were well disguised. So Aditi also appeared there. So Aditi, she took a bundle of kusa grass and started to give blessings. She gave blessings. May you have a long life. May you have a long life. She was thinking in the back of her mind, because I know you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so I'm blessing you that you may eternally stay here in the material world to perform your pastimes. Huh? So that's what she was thinking. That's while she was blessing. So she was smiling while she was blessing. She said, look what I'm doing here. I'm blessing him, and now he's bound by these blessings to stay longer. She was thinking, I'm tricking him like this. So how nice, huh? How all these different pastimes are going on. And I went on reading, and then there's this point where two thieves are stealing the young child because he's nicely decorated with golden bangles and jewels, and they carry him away on the shoulders. But then Lord Chaitanya, little Nimai, by his illusory potency, makes the thieves lose the way. And as the thieves are running to their own house, somehow or other they return just in front of the house of Jagannath Misra, who says, oh, look, there's Nimai. And Nimai is running right to his father. And then the thieves escape. So it is said that the thieves, they are getting the benefit for having carried the Lord. And the Lord has taken that as service. And in this way, they have made so much spiritual advancement. So this is a very important little aspect of that whole pastime, that it shows the merciful nature of Lord Chaitanya, that although they come to harm him as thieves, that since they're carrying him, he takes it, that they're doing service for him, therefore, how nice, they're serving me, therefore they've made spiritual advancement. So that's very important, to understand these things. So by reading about the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, gradually our faith in the mercy of the Lord is increasing. And this is what it's all about. When we realize how merciful Krishna is, then we become more and more convinced that it can be done. And then all the material desires and all our mental problems and all our material contamination doesn't seem so insurmountable anymore, the more we find out about Krishna. Like, let's take shelter of his lotus feet, because at the bottom of his feet there are all these signs on his feet. And there's a thunderbolt. And the thunderbolt is there because it says that everyone sometimes has this feeling that other people, yes, they have become great devotees. I know. So many became great devotees. But for me, oh, it's going to be very difficult because I have such bad karma. My karma is so bad that for me there's little hope. You know, my karma, it's bigger than Mount Everest. It's like a huge mountain. So big is my karma. It's insurmountable. Insurmountable. I don't think I can ever overcome this karma. Therefore, Krishna has a thunderbolt on his lotus feet, because with that thunderbolt, he is smashing the mountain of karma that is an obstacle for us to approach him. So, again, to reassure us, take shelter of my feet and just see. There is this thunderbolt, don't worry. Say, okay, the karma I can imagine, but you know, my mind, you know, my mind is so strong. It is so strong. My mind, it just cannot be controlled. Impossible. Impossible. Anything can be done. Maybe my karma can be destroyed, but my mind can never be controlled. I mean, I can't control my mind. What to do? Don't worry. Krishna has that little stick on his feet that is there for controlling elephants. So, if your mind is as big as an elephant, even then it can be brought under control. So like this, Krishna has all these signs on his feet. There is a barley corn on the feet of Krishna, which is a symbol that he will supply all material needs, and that we should not be afraid, that we should not calculate, well, but if I surrender my life to Krishna, then what about my business? I have to do so much business, and who will look after my shop if I am praying all day? I don't think this is feasible. But we need not worry. The barley corn is there, and Krishna says, I will provide. I will take care of you. And when we read in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, then we can read how Srivas Thakur was not going to work, never. He would not go to work, no. Said, Lord Chaitanya asked him one day, Srivas, you never work? No, I never work. My Lord, I will never work. Srivas, but do you not have to go outside to work? Srivas says, no. He said, if somehow or other nothing comes in, if there's nothing to eat, well, then we'll fast. He said, we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll fast. And then, if the second day nothing comes, we'll chant Hare Krishna and we'll fast. And if the third day nothing comes, then we'll go to the Ganga and drown ourselves. So, Lord Chaitanya said, no, please, Srivas, don't do that. It will never come to that. In your house, it will never lack of anything. So in this way, the Lord promises to maintain his devotee. So by reading all these pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, the only purpose of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya are to increase our faith in his mercy, so that we also become fearless, and that we are also ready to act on a transcendental platform and give up all material calculation. And that we will just simply, in a humble mood, render service to him, no longer in competition with him, no longer looking for all kinds of material arrangements for our protection, our satisfaction, and so forth. And that we know that Krishna will protect us, he will fully satisfy us, there is no doubt about us. Let us just turn to him. That is the purpose of this verse, which is condemning everything else. Dharma prujita kaitavo. It says dharma also refers to occupation. Sometimes Prabhupada translates the verse as occupation. So it is not only referring to religious activities, it's referring to all activities. All activities are simply cheating. Not only cheating religions, but also cheating business and cheating works and all cheating. The only thing that is not cheating is pure devotional service to Krishna. So, somehow or other, the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to give us this understanding that pure devotional service to Krishna is our only business. And when we do so, yenatma supasidati, then we will be fully satisfied. Okay, any questions or comments?
So, why is that devotees, they tend to be so disturbed, so flickering their mind and get so much into trouble because of material money and
okay.
Means that they don't have any faith in Krishna, they haven't surrendered, what is it?
Well, it starts, of course, with the Satya Yuga, that those who failed to go back to Godhead, they took birth again, and eventually those who were of a low nature, who were actually not qualified to be human beings in Satya Yuga, they were maybe animals and other creatures, they also got a chance in the Treta Yuga to go back to Godhead in spite of not being so qualified. And again, those who failed there, they got another chance in the Dwapara Yuga to also go back to Godhead, although it took less qualification. So now, the ones who were the most restless, who were hopeless, helpless, absolutely not qualified, less intelligent, the most backwards, retarded, and absolutely degraded living entities, right, were somehow or other given a chance to take a human birth. Of course, if you look at it in terms of what is human in Satya Yuga and what is human in Kali Yuga, you know, the people of Satya Yuga would have looked like, no, it's not, it cannot be true. Are those human beings? Right? But somehow or other we call it human beings, and Krishna accepts it whatever it is, the creature of Kali Yuga as human being. And so here we are, walking, trotting around with great pride that we are human beings, right? The Lord and Master of planet Earth, and we are looking with greedy eyes at the universe, thinking we'll conquer that as well. And in the midst of all this, right, we came across the most merciful representatives of the Supreme Lord who offered us devotional service, and we didn't want to take it. We absolutely were trying to avoid it as much as we could, but the pure devotees have somehow or other gotten us to the point of taking it. And still, while we are in the middle of it, we keep on reluctantly saying, oh, it's so difficult. Do I really have to take this prasadam? I cannot lift my hand, you know, to bring it to my mouth. It's so heavy. Can't someone come to help me, to feed me, you know, like, do I really have to do it all myself? It's so difficult, devotional service, right? But even, yes, so even Chanakya Pandit says, nasuptasya singaya na pravishanti mukaya mriga, that even the lion has to go hunting for his dears. They don't walk in his mouth while they're asleep. So this is our disease, you know, that we want everything to come without any endeavor. So that's the beginning. That's how we started off with. That's the first why. Then the second why is we make offenses. Well, we know we make offenses in the matter of chanting the holy name. It's not that this is accidental. We should know that we are like a big boil, that we are like offense personified, right? That we are completely naturally full of offense, right? Just like a boil is full of pus, that it's always in there, waiting for an opportunity to come out. So at the slightest provocation, right, the pus comes out, you know. So full is this boil with offense, right? So when there's even not a good reason, but only half a reason, we quickly make a few offenses, right? In this way, if we have the opportunity to make offenses, we surely will, and therefore then the tiny little bit of taste that we developed in devotional service is again being destroyed by these offenses, right? So in this way, spiritual life, I don't make any of advancement, you know. I've been trying to be a devotee for half my life and I'm still feeling completely not inspired. Maybe it's just not me, and maybe I should be honest with myself and be what I am, a debauchee. Right? That's what I always thought I was. And like that, and then give up spiritual life. No, it is a matter of becoming more intelligent and seeing ourselves from what we are. Humility means that we realize that we are thoroughly contaminated by the qualities of Kali Yuga, that therefore we have all these offensive tendencies, and that we should make a conscious endeavor to conquer them. But as soon as we start thinking, well, we are brahmanas, you know, well, it's like, still hanging there from my Gayatri this morning, you know, forgot to tuck it back in. Just like that. So, you know, as soon as we start thinking we are brahmanas, as soon as we start thinking we have any qualification, then we forget what we really are. Then we can never do anything about it. But when we are ready to admit our real nature, then we can make a conscious endeavor to change, and then maybe we can gradually conquer our offenses, and by doing that, the process of purification can work better. Can work better. Then we'll change very quickly. I guess that's it. That's why. Can you do? Yes, that's Rupa Maharaj. He wrote that Lord Ramachandra was taking on the task of conquering Lanka. So it wasn't easy. Said, but well, he had an army of monkeys, whereas Prabhupada had an army of hippies from the Lower East Side. So what Prabhupada did was even greater. He said like that. Yes.
Sort of, but not exactly, in defense of the traditional Haribo picture. They were basically took when Prabhupada was there, and everyone would go out of windows. But what was happening after a while is that devotees would believe our propaganda, specifically made to attract people to come to Krishna consciousness, not to be a representation of what we are.
Right.
You know, but so sometimes devotees believe the propaganda.
Yeah.
Instead of working to overcome what we needed to overcome to become what we were saying we were trying to become with our propaganda.
Yeah, I'm for the pictures. No, I did. I wasn't speaking.
I wasn't speaking against the pictures.
The prophet was in the temple.
Yeah.
Like 20 other temples were there too. So it looked like the temples were fuller than they were. So there were great opportunities to take pictures of temples full of devotees, so you could attract more people to become devotees.
No, so the old system for Krishna consciousness, to make propaganda for Krishna consciousness is good. But we must make sure that it's not all propaganda, but that it's also substance, because otherwise it's hot. We call that hot air, you know? We call that hot air, right?
Prabhupada making sannyasis out of young men. You have to make propaganda out of the little we had. We didn't have much.
Yeah.
Now it's more obviously beneficial to be a little bit more honest in our propaganda. Times have changed.
Yeah. Okay, I'm all for these pictures. And I remember, there's the famous story that Madhuvisa tells, how he arranged the picture in front of the Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, that one, where everyone's lined up, and then, so it was all arranged that everyone stood there, and Madhuvisa, he was lining up everyone in the right position. So then Brahmananda stood right next to Prabhupada, smiling, and he was ready. And then at the very end, after everyone stood, then Madhuvisa he just stood right in front of Brahmananda. Like next to Prabhupada, like that. So then, with a big smile, he says, and then Brahmananda was standing behind him, was very upset, so get out here, you know. And anyway, he kept on standing. So then Brahmananda was pinching him in his back. Very hard as he could, right? But Madhuvisa's smile was fixed, nothing could change it. So he's tolerating the squeezing, and it must have been a hard squeeze. But anyway, you can see the picture. Madhuvisa is right next to Prabhupada there with a big smile. So there were many pastimes also in these pictures that are very nice. It's nice. I was just sketching with these photographic exhibit. My photographic exhibition. I was just sketching a little point. The point that merely external expansion is not sufficient, but that there must be some substance, and that the real substance is not just a matter of trying to work up enthusiasm, but that it must come from conviction about that you can enjoy in the material sense, and about the mercy of Krishna and of Lord Chaitanya. And if such conviction is there, then we can be very inspired to go back to Godhead, and then we are determined. And then it has depth and meaning, what we are doing in terms of propaganda. Then it's not just a picture of a blissful devotee, but then he is a blissful devotee. And that's worth more than a picture of a blissful devotee. Although, you know, you have these devotees all smile, and that's great. But if later on the other picture you don't take, you know, like, we would like to see that genuine inspiration.
Our cutting room floors have a lot of pictures.
Huh?
I said our cutting room floors have a lot of pictures on them.
On the other side, huh? Yeah. Yeah. You want to say something?
I just, just on this line that I remember being involved in pictures externally and internal pictures, and I remember there may be a way that you can detect that somebody is happy in the picture.
I think the pictures in itself are just meant to be an illustration, and also in my not but also in my point, right? My point is basically not about the pictures, can leave the pictures aside. But my point is that we should be genuinely inspired. Yeah. And that we should thoroughly understand why Krishna consciousness is a better way of life. And if we understand why it's a better way of life, then we will be, and for two reasons. One is that we understand the negative side of material existence, and the other reason that we understand the positive side of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when we understand these two things, then we will be well situated on our own level in Krishna consciousness. You know, one is still full of material desires, but he's convinced about the mercy of Mahaprabhu. He's inspired. Another one is more purified and therefore goes deeper into his relationship with Mahaprabhu. He is inspired in another way, maybe deeper, but all are inspired on their own level. So that is my point. That must be there. That on our own level, wherever we are, as akama or sakama, or as devotees with material desire or devotees without material desires, we are inspired by understanding that Krishna consciousness is a better way of life.
It seems to me that recently, or the last months, especially after Hare Krishna, he left ISKCON, then it's like there are two ways of where the lectures are conducted in a way that some emphasis very much on the knowledge on the Dharma, that you should do till everything, your qualities, everything, situate yourself properly and in your devotional service, use your qualities and like this, and then there is now what you said, with this snake and the frog, that don't try to enjoy that little fly there in the material world. And then it seems like that it's such a fine balance, how to balance this to, you know what I mean?
That I see.
To add one extreme back to the other extreme.
Okay, well, I don't say you cannot have a few flies while the front is still sticking out of the serpent. That's okay. But you can't take it too serious, these flies. I mean, it's more serious, obviously, that we're being eaten by the serpent. So if someone wants to situate somewhere in Varna Ashram, I don't know what that means, you see. If I, for example, look at the Grihastha Ashram, I find a description about four types of Grihasthas. And I find that there are two types. One is called Abhartha. He is a professional. The other one is called Ulangita. He is an accumulator. And then there are two, so these are the two that are very much mixing in material matters. And then there are two other types, of which the Sanskrit names I have forgotten. They are more renounced. One is living from whatever grains he picks up from the market, and another one is just trying to live simple and with whatever seems to come in a natural way. So what is Varna Ashram anyway? And I'm saying, we're hearing so many times that we need Varna Ashram in our society. What does it mean? What is it? How do we fill it in? Who has filled it in yet? Right? Varna Ashram. So Varna Ashram has all these sites. Varna Ashram has a site where there is room for interaction with matter, for expanding on the material plane, and Varna Ashram has a site for gradual renunciation of matter. And all these things are good. And we always had that in our movement. Maybe we didn't give it enough shape. So Varna Ashram is sometimes kind of equated with the concept of let's enjoy. Now let's have Varna Ashram, let's enjoy. But that's not what I understand Varna Ashram is. What I understand is Varna Ashram is let us gradually simplify our existence. And then when life becomes more simple, then we have more chance to focus on the spiritual side of life. I think that is the real meaning of Varna Ashram. But it doesn't matter how we live. For me, it's like many times I say, for me it's simple to be a sannyasi. For someone else it may be simple to be a businessman. Right? That may be more simple. That may be more complicated to be a sannyasi. So whatever comes natural, somehow or other, let's do something for Krishna. That's what counts. It doesn't matter that I'm trotting around with a big stick, etc., if I don't do something for Krishna with it. It's the one who does something with his position for Krishna, he will get the mercy. Krishna is not looking, what ashram are you in? Right? Or what is your, are you rich or poor? Or whatever. Krishna is looking, what service are we doing? So I think, yes, one ashram we can have, but let's do something with it for Krishna. And if varnashram means I will do less and less for Krishna and more for my own private life, they say, okay, if that's what you need to do, that's also okay, as long as you keep then the purity, etc., for Krishna. But ultimately, at the end of life, we will all be judged, and what will be judged is how much sacrifice we made for Krishna. In devotion for Krishna, how much we somehow or other sacrifice for Krishna. That's what will tip the balance when it's weighed, you know. This is a reason to stay in the material world, this is a reason to go back. The balance going up and down. So the more yajna, more sacrifice has been done for Krishna, somehow or other, that will tip the balance to go back to Godhead. So the snake thing is, we're running out of time. So let us somehow or other not forget that by the time we're completely swallowed, we must be ready to go back to Godhead. So, what we do on the way, as you like. Everyone, as we like.
If I realize I am like a worm. So
if you realize you're like a worm. Less than a worm.
So how I can dance in front of the temple and how I can...
Okay, so you may realize you're less than a worm, but Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj, he realized that he was a worm, lower than a worm in stool. Can you imagine? Not just an ordinary worm, but a worm in stool, and lower than that. So there's a few verses in the Chaitanya Charitamrita describing that. And then immediately after that, there is a verse describing, but how amazing is it that in spite of all that, I have received the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So it is that. We have no qualification. We may be lower than a worm, but still we have received the mercy from Lord Nityananda, which is coming in the parampara, and because of that, we can dance in front of the deities. Only because of that, no other reason. Without the mercy of Lord Nityananda, it would not be possible to dance in front of the deities. No one can dance in front of the deities without the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Therefore you can dance in front of the deities. Because you have the mercy. Therefore I can sit here and speak something, although I'm also lower than a worm. But still I can say something because of the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Okay, it's getting really late. Yes.
So two things about, first of all, is Srila's hardcore and how to actually just apply anything, and also describe the scenario with the photos. That we have this first temple, second temple, and you probably have taken a third picture, which you had no palace anymore, you had a palace, but you had very few devotees. So the old days, they were very serious and like that, but still seem like Krishna did not supply in that case what happened.
Yeah, Krishna is not necessarily always supplying us our material facilities. He may, and he may not. It depends. When a devotee is 100% surrendered to Krishna, then Krishna may supply him things in an unlimited way. But when devotees are materially still not free from entanglement, then Krishna may also withhold material facility because they may not be able to use it. And in that case, he may even take away material facilities because it will become an obstacle in spiritual life. And we see sometimes Krishna cares more to teach a devotee than to uphold all the facility that is being created for the sake of preaching. We have a lot of practical experience from that, right? We see this in the history of our movement. How, you know, just to teach his devotees, Krishna may just, boom, destroy so many things for a while and just look like it, until the devotees begin to look, oh, and then they come to their senses. So Krishna is more attached to the devotees than to all the, than to the temples and all the achievements that the devotees have. That is also very clear from that aspect. Anyway, Krishna can do as he likes, right? He can make his devotee glorious by denying him facility, and he can make his devotee glorious by giving him unlimited facility. Everyone plays a role according to Krishna. That is also there. So there's no, it's not an absolute law that anyone who serves Krishna will never have to work, right? But in the case of Srivas Thakur, he got that benediction from Lord Chaitanya, and he used his time very nicely for worshipping the Lord. So yes, our movement is going like that, through ups and downs materially. But we don't see it like that. We see that our movement is spreading like anything. We were talking yesterday how it's spreading like anything, everywhere. Because if somebody is seeing a devotee, then he's thinking, there goes one of these Hare Krishnas. And that counts as manasa jap, mental chanting. And one makes spiritual advancement for that. Right? It's purified. It's even chanting Hare Krishna. So anyone who thinks, there goes a Hare Krishna, is chanting manasa jap, and at that point, he is actually counted as a devotee. So just by seeing a devotee, they become devotees. So powerful is this movement. So there is certainly no setback. There is no setback of the Krishna consciousness movement. We may see things in terms of setbacks and in progress, but there is only progress. It is just spreading like anything all over the world. If we look at it from a spiritual perspective.
I can see that sometimes when we live in a situation, we get focused on that situation and our vision becomes very narrow. And then for us, that situation becomes the center of our world. But actually for each temple, that unfortunately, because obviously when Krishna takes away a temple or whatever facility, it means that there's been misuse of those facilities, like you said. But at the same time, it may be another three temples open in a different part of the world. Yeah. So everything is balanced in that way.
We don't know Krishna's plan also, of course, you know, like in Amsterdam, which is one of those cities where it's so hard. Once they had a temple with 80 rooms, and now they have one with 5. So you can understand what happened. So much endeavor has been put into trying to get a bigger temple again, because 5 is really small. Right? But it just doesn't seem to work. And it's always almost working, just now. It's almost happening, but it's just not happening yet. But maybe, you know, sometimes people say the whole city is going to go underwater, right? And it's in Holland, everyone's always thinking, you know, it could be, right? Yeah, it could be. Could be. And maybe that's why it doesn't work. Maybe. So we don't know what Krishna's plans are in this regard. Why temples open and close. But still, to close a temple is not a... Prabhupada did not like that. That is, when the Edinburgh temple was closed, then Prabhupada was very upset, and he told the devotees that they should somehow or other get the building back. They had already sold it. He said, buy it back. But this is Krishna's temple. It belongs to him. You cannot take it away. So closing temples was not Prabhupada's favorite. But I'm not speaking in favor or against anything in this regard when we speak about the practical situation here, because we have to be practical and realistic, and we must do what we can, and we cannot do what we cannot do. But we must thoroughly think before we act, and it's, we should take such decisions are of a very serious nature and must be taken with deep consideration, not just born out of pressure, but rather born out of researching all the avenues very thoroughly. And when there's really no other option, okay, then one may have to close the temple and move to another temple. Okay, I think now we stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.